As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide supports financial professionals with client-friendly resources and innovative solutions to help create greater retirement security for their clients. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
This is the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. I'm Tom Keane, along with Paul Sweeney. Join us each day for insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. You can also watch the show live on YouTube. Visit the Bloomberg Podcast channel on YouTube to see the show weekday mornings from 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern from our global headquarters in New York City. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen. And always on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Terminal, and the Bloomberg Business App. Right now, we have all sorts of side agreements with our guests. I mean, you know, there's like sensitive issues between UNC and Duke guests and all that with Paul. One of the things we have is David Rosenberg will not come on unless the Toronto Maple Leafs lose. Joining us now, David Rosenberg, of course, Montreal Canadiens fan. He is based in Toronto in the foreign lands, and he joins us from Rosenberg Research. David, is disinflation still in place?
Well, I do believe that the trend towards lower inflation is intact, notwithstanding what happened in January, which seems to be quite a bit of early year noise, related to some specific idiosyncratic factors, you know, auto insurance premiums, health insurance premiums. I'd say that, you know, Tom, we talked about this last time, and we've talked about it like almost forever about how flawed a statistic the CPI is when 27% of the index is one question to a sample of homeowners, which is how much do you think your home price, how much do you think you can rent your home, your unit out for? And so, you know, that's the owner's equivalent rent in particular is an ongoing source of frustration for people like me. But I do think that the overall trend is going to be intact.
David, you own the high ground on this. To review this quickly with a lack of time, because Paul wants to get in. There was a guy named Farrell at Merrill Lynch a few years ago, and he had this young Turk named Rosenberg who owned the slicing and dicing of inflation. If you don't like CPI, what inflation series, David Rosenberg, should we pay attention to?
Well, you know, what's interesting is that, you know, in December, I think it was Governor Waller had said that the Fed was increasingly shifting its focus from, you know, the government data towards what business contacts were telling them. And, you know, we're going to get the beige book tomorrow. And the last couple of beige books have said decisively that the corporate sector is seeing diminished pricing power. The ability to pass on cost increases has gone down materially. So I think you have to, I mean, so much of the CPI, even the PCE deflator, are imputed guesswork. They're imputed pricing in the service sector. So I'd say turn your attention to the things you can see, touch, and feel in the product sector. And when people say to me, well, but, you know, all the disinflation's been in the goods sector, well, those are the prices you can actually have reliability on as opposed to imputed services. My big concern is that it's the service sector that the Fed is most focused on, and that is the most unreliable components you have within the CPI and PC deflator. So I say look at the prices of the things you can see, touch, and feel, and they're actually in a deflationary momentum, and I expect that that will persist over the next year.
So, David, this is a good week to be an economist. Lots of economic data coming out this week, including we're going to hear from Fed Chairman Jay Powell. Do you expect the chairman to, I don't know, try to walk back a little bit some of the December commentary? It seems like the economic data is supporting just kind of waiting here on rate cuts.
Well, firstly, it's always a great time to be an economist. this week's no exception. We just have to fasten our seatbelt and stay at our desk 24/7. Look, the Fed has already walked back that dovishness in December. The markets leapt on some, you know, comment that I think Mary Daly made about that maybe March would be the date. And of course, then the futures price in, you know, 6 rate cuts, not 3. The Fed has successfully calibrated the market back to where it was in December. I expect that I think he's going to be pretty hawkish. Everybody is lined up hawkish relative to where they were in December. And the question is going to be, will he sound more or less hawkish than what's priced in right now? My big concern, actually, and this is coming from a bond bull and who would be ordinarily a dove on the Fed, I think he's going to sound pretty hawkish tomorrow.
Hmm. How about the, we're going to get some data here. I mean, again, a big data week here. You got the payrolls on Friday. I mean, that's kind of one of the issues for this market is the labor market's been very strong here.
Well, look, if you bow down to the holy grail of non-farm payrolls, that's what you would believe. And of course, that's all the Fed focuses on is non-farm payrolls. And I've almost given up trying to forecast the number because last year, half of the growth in non-farm payrolls didn't even come from the survey. It came from the birth death model, what we used to call the plug factor. But frankly, if you looked at the household survey and especially the contraction in full-time jobs over the past 6 months, we're replacing full-time jobs with part-time jobs. There's been practically no growth in the household survey over the course of the past half year. If you look at the household survey, you'd be thinking this recession is probably staring us in the face. The other thing I would just mention is this. Look at the divergence between the non-farm payroll headlines and the work week. The work week is already back at recession levels. So I know I hear this all the time, the employment numbers, the robust economy. But actually, you know, when you dig beneath the veneer, even of the beloved payroll survey, and you look at the hours worked, it's telling you something a little more insidious about what's happening in the labor market than what the current consensus narrative is.
David, you got to leave it there. David Rosenberg, I don't want to go longer. We can't. David Rosenberg of Rosenberg Research in Toronto. We get a huge response when he's on. Thank you for the response.
Inflation, market volatility, economic insecurity. Who isn't looking for greater retirement security these days? As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide helps millions of people invest in their financial futures. With client-friendly resources and innovative solutions, Nationwide supports financial professionals so they can help clients feel more confident in their retirement years. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
This is a joy right now. Constance Hunter with us, senior advisor at Macro Policy Perspectives. Paul wants to grill her here on the domestic economy, which is what we do with Diane Swank. But we ran into each other last night at the Council on Foreign Relations. I sort of thought I'd go by and get some of the quality whores d'oeuvres that they have at the CFR.
And that wine.
They'd be like, yeah, well, they serve, at least, yeah, CFR served Boone's Farm. Last night. But instead, I got a packed room with a riveting Secretary of Commerce, the former governor of Rhode Island, Gina Raimondo. Her intensity surprised me on our new Pacific Rim efforts, I guess is how I'd put it. What did you take away from the comments of a Secretary of Commerce last night?
Well, one that, you know, this is an important region for the U.S. There are, you know, you look at the demographics of India, Indonesia, the Philippines, Thailand. These are all countries with highly favorable demographics. And then you look at the opportunities for workforce development, you know, India is producing a huge number of engineers every year, right? And you think about the future of where everything's going with technology. The other thing that I felt was very interesting is this is a public-private partnership where the government-to-government relations give cover to make sure that you don't have, what did we call it, an excessive stroke of the pen risk, right? So you have, if you're going to go in and invest in these countries, that you have a little more durability and visibility. And this public-private partnership aspect means it's going to be very difficult to dismantle this.
Yeah, it's going to be really important. Constance Hunter, thank you so much for that. Paul, I love when I have all my radar down. I'm really like, you know, it's okay. It's going to be an event. Great. Constance Hunter's there. That alone is worth it. Elizabeth Economy was there with her public service, working with the Secretary of Commerce. And instead, I got a riveting Raimondo on the new approach to the Pacific Rim. I don't know what it means the next 3 years out, but it was tangible.
Constance, that kind of brings to the question that a lot of folks have, which is, what's going on with China? And how do I deal with China? It's almost like you talk to an emerging market person, they're like, boy, it's a big part of my MSCI index, but a lot of folks say it's uninvestable. How do you think about China when you think about that part of the world?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I mean, so I'll just start with this. When you look at the US, when we had our, when the global financial crisis hit, so before that, real estate was 6% of our GDP. And the recovery from that took over a decade, okay?
Yep.
Now, if we benchmark that 6%, real estate is 25 to 30% of China's GDP. And we are now, by the way, at 3% in the US, right? So let's say you cut that in half. It's going to take at least a decade or two for them to recover. You're looking at Japan is the preview movie, right?
Wow.
It is the preview movie. And look how many years it took back to get back to the right level in their, or, you know, to get back to previous highs in their equity market. It's going to be very difficult for them to make progress here. And I will just say this about their GDP numbers. You know how they get those GDP numbers. They revise the previous years. So the way you can see what's going on is you can look at China GDP as a percent of US GDP, and you can look at that ratio. And that continues to go down. And so they are growing at a slower pace than they say they are.
Yeah, it's just extraordinary. I don't know. Yeah, again, that gives you a great framework comparing it to the U.S. and great financial crisis. All right, let's bring it back to here. I mean, we think about the U.S. economy, and Tom and I, we've talked about it with various guests on this program, about the seemingly the exceptionalism of the U.S. economy here relative to China, for example, relative to European economies, the U.K. maybe. Is that something that can continue, the U.S. almost kind of exceptional versus other parts of the world?
Well, and the reason that people are so uncertain about this is because we don't fully understand productivity, right? If we understood productivity, you would have governments adding a cup of capital investment and a third of a cup of R&D investment and sprinkle on some education and upskilling, and then voila, you'd have this productivity growth, right? So we're in this productivity surge. The question is, how long will it last and what is underpinning it? And we see a number of things underpinning it. So just the healing of supply chains helped reduce sand in the gears.
Right. Yep.
Then you have people resorting all through the pandemic into jobs that were better fits for them. That improves productivity. And on the flip side now, you have people staying at jobs longer.
You and I talked, she gave me a dissertation last night. I learned more from her than I learned from the Secretary of Commerce. Cut to the chase. You and Diane Swonk have a fabulous holistic view of the economy. If we get a productivity growth, to steal from the former president, is it morning in America?
Yes.
Why do so many of our listeners say no?
It's hard to see it when you're in the middle of it, I think. And, there's also a great deal of uncertainty right now, right? People don't know, or am I going to lose my job because of AI?
Mm-hmm.
You look at the deep fakes that are out there. It's becoming harder to know what to trust, right? And was it Warren Buffett who said that trust is a really powerful, I'm probably misquoting him, but you know.
That's okay, it's surveillance, you're allowed to do that.
It was either Munger or Buffett who said that trust is the most powerful force in the universe, right? And so we are in a low trust environment, and that to me is the biggest risk to the economy.
How about this labor economy? We're going to get a big print here on Friday. For a lot of folks, including myself, I'm just kind of surprised at the resilience of the U.S. labor market. Is it real? Is it as strong as it appears to be?
Yeah, that's a great question. So one of the things we do at Macro Policy Perspectives is we do earnings scraping and look at what companies are saying about hiring and firing intentions. So what we see is that companies while they're hiring less and fire, you know, intention to lay people off has gone up slightly, you do see companies continue to labor hoard. And the way that they're doing this is they are reducing hours worked, right? So in reality, what that does is it reduces total income, which reduces spending power. So it softens the economy, but people don't lose their jobs. That's an important factor.
Are you working less, Tom? I'm not working any less.
No, we talked about this last. You see, she put. I had a martini or two,
and
we're talking to Constance about this last night. We're all working harder than we've ever worked before, and I think part of it's a digital thing. Like, you know, I'm working all weekend because boom, it's right there on your screen, or, you know, I'm the afterthought, trying to pretend I'm, you know, being good and. I'm on my phone worried about, you know, stochastic movements in the market or whatever. Constance, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for that perspective off what you and I saw at the Council on Foreign Relations.
Megan Robson joins us, U.S. credit strategy at BNP Paribas. Megan, you know, in terms of credit here, yeah. You know, I'm not buying a recession, so I think I can take some credit risk here. Where do you send me?
So, first of all, thank you for having me. So, we completely agree with what you just said. Downside risks look a lot lower and continue to diminish, especially in the high yield space where you've seen issuers chip away at refinancing walls. And since October, borrowing yields have come down. So it means the penalty to refi has come down. So within the leveraged finance space, we do like taking some credit risk. So single Bs we think look attractive. We're more selective on triple Cs, but there definitely are some sectors and names where we like to add there. And then also, you know, with fewer rate cuts, you can look to the double B loan space to offer a pickup and carry where you have a yield advantage of about 100 basis points relative to fixed rate high yield at the moment.
So, I mean, I have to admit, Megan, I was surprised that in last year, 2023, that U.S. high yield was the place to really make your money in the fixed income space last year. With all the talk of a recession around everybody's corner, high yield was the place to be. So is that I can still go that far out on the risk curve?
So we do think your the argument for owning high yield and credit right now is really more of a carry argument.
Okay.
So we don't see a lot of spread upside from here. In fact, our spread target for the end of the year is a bit wider from these levels. But we do think spreads widen. It's a good opportunity for investors to add to risk, sort of buy the dip, if you will. And the argument for carry here, or for credit here, is definitely more of a carry one rather than spreads tightening.
Well, let's talk about that because, you know, Bramo 101, Lisa Bramowitz would say spreads are in. I mean, that's all there is. Define that, folks. If you've got corporate bonds and they have a yield of, say, 6, in Megan Robson's full faith and credit world is 4, and then the yield comes from 6 into 5, the spread goes from 2% to 1% and from 200 basis points to 100 basis points. Where are spreads right now, Megan? Are they absurdly tight?
So we think they're, you know, historically on a percentile basis, spreads are absolutely trading tight. So look at the investment grade market. Over the last month or so, we've been trading at 90 to 95 basis points. So, you know, higher quality companies giving you some spread pickup relative to treasuries. High yield, we're trading at about 300 to 310 over. That's been the range over the last month or so.
I had this discussion last night, Megan. Sassauer's in here.
I mean,
you know, Paul, compared to you, he's out of control.
Yes.
Megan, should our audience be buying triple C paper? Isn't that like telling somebody to buy, you know, some silver mine off the Vancouver index?
So we're not recommending triple C's at this point. And I think that it's more prudent if you do want to add into high yield risk, single B's, it's a place where you can still get a bit of a pickup and carry, but without really taking a lot of that risk. And Tom, to your point, triple C's have already tightened a lot to start the year. So I think the trade to add to triple C's has already...
Yeah, but
played out and at these levels trading pretty tight.
I mean, you're at a wicked conservative French bank. Are you telling me a B-rated, single B-rated bond is a speculation or an investment?
So I think in the high yield market where it is fixed rate and issuers have chipped away and brought down their maturities for this year. I think it's a prudent investment, lower volatility, but in the loan space, I would agree with you where you have floating rate coupons, continued debate about whether or not we actually get the rate cuts that consensus expects. I think their single Bs are much riskier, where you have interest coverage is hovering around just one time. So given floating rates are higher, the fundamentals, I think, much more vulnerable on the single B loan side.
Paul, did you see the banner Ari put out on YouTube? Tom Keene recommends triple C bonds. Ari, you're getting me into trouble in there.
I have
another Tang mimosa. Okay, Paul, help me here.
Hey, Megan, what are the sectors that you guys like here in the credit space?
So in investment grade, we're recommending sectors that we see as deleveraging this year. So there is this theme we think will be important over the next year or two, where companies are incentivized to pay down debt. And you saw that last quarter, particularly in investment grade healthcare, investment grade telecom, sectors where more defensive, they have a lot of free cash flow and are actively paying down debt. So that's a positive client story. And then in the high yield space, we're recommending an overweight to media. So
nice.
This is based on the election, right. So we are forecasting a pickup in election advertising spend relative to the last election cycle. So you've already seen a lot of fundraising from both political parties, and likely that will be put to work.
We're going to end the interview, but Megan, we can't. Sweeney will have a tantrum if we don't do this. Are you telling Paul Sweeney you can buy the debt 63% of Warner Brothers Discovery for total return?
So we're, of course, within media, not a wholesale buy on every sector, but look in the high yield space. There's a lot of credits that have bottomed fundamentals last year and are absolutely improving in terms of their free cash flow. They have locked in more ad spend, and you can see the leverage is definitely manageable relative to history, and so we stand by the high yield media pick.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what we've heard in the past, Tom. A media credit, a lot better than media equity. So that's kind of what we hear. Megan Robson, thanks so much for joining us. Megan Robson, U.S. Credit Strategy, BNP Paribas. We thank you for getting your thoughts there.
Inflation, market volatility, economic insecurity. Who isn't looking for greater retirement security these days? As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide helps millions of people invest in their financial futures. With client-friendly resources and innovative solutions, Nationwide supports financial professionals so they can help clients feel more confident in their retirement years. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Let us look at the front pages. We do that around the world. She's never seen a seltzer she didn't like. Lisa Mateo, what do you got today?
High noon. That's my favorite. All right. We're starting with Fox's chief executive. Okay, so Lachlan Murdoch is saying that the sports streaming service could take a little bit longer to get some subscribers. 5 years to reach 5 million subscribers. That's what he's saying. He was talking at a conference.
You're missing the punchline. $50?
Well, here's the thing. He said that Australia's Kayo Sports, which is what he's kind of basing it off. That's where he's saying he got the idea for this from.
Sounds
because
like his father.
It's from Foxtel, which is part of his News Corp, so he's familiar with it. They charge for their sports streaming service $16 a month. But he's saying, yeah, it's going to cost more in the U.S. because the rights cost a lot more than that.
5 million. I thought that was a typo.
You know,
but
I know.
Bloomberg doesn't do typos. So, I mean, it's five. I mean, what kind of business is that? I have no idea. They're saying they're targeting the people that don't subscribe to a pay Correct. TV. And so maybe they will, in fact, pay that. I don't know. But it is just getting so fragmented with all these streaming offerings. I just think it's just a disaster right now.
It's a disaster waiting to happen. Still no name for it either.
No. All right. Interesting. What else we got?
So yesterday we talked about how Whole Foods was shrinking its stores. Well, now we've been talking about this actually this morning. The big box retailers are doing that same thing. So you have Best Buy, Macy's. They said that they're planning to add those smaller format stores. It's going to help cut costs, help with convenience as well. But here's the thing. Consumers are using the stores differently. So the consumer is shopping differently. They're not going in and looking for things. They're more going on social media and scrolling and then going to the store maybe and picking up what they notice. So they don't need the big stores anymore. So that's the kind of the trend that they're seeing.
I'm seeing this everywhere. I believe I saw yesterday. I do not have this in front of me, folks, and I'm ill-briefed. But grocery stores, the internet, order your groceries off the internet, is so successful. They're talking about shrinking all that square footage.
Yeah, like the Instacart. I know a lot of my family members use Instacart because they don't want to go to the store, but they're shrinking the stores because
What we learned in the pandemic is, you know, you still like to have this whole omni-channel thing. Maybe you shop online, pick it up at the store, or maybe you want to browse at the store, then buy it online. So, yes, you need the physical retail, but maybe not in the same way, i.e. all the square footage that you did before. So maybe that's the new retail model.
Next.
Exactly.
Oh, ooh, this is coming for you. For
pricey
Lisa. This is for
handbags
Lisa.
Are getting pricier. Okay, so luxury brands.
I hate you.
Here we go. Mrs. Keene, pay attention. The basic The Birkin handbag, the basic one has jumped $1,000. I thought this was a typo, but no, this is data from PursePop, which is on the terminal right now. The basic Birkin, it's a 9-inch handbag in U.S. stores increased by 10% to $11,400 before sales tax.
Wow.
That is such a thing. Even
so
the
rare
ones
set
are
it
more
down?
Expensive.
You can, can you even, if you set it down, you lose it.
You can't
touch
do that. Anything. You can't put it on the floor. You can't put it. I mean, even the restaurants have chair hand.
I would
handbags,
suggest
chairs for your handbag.
Oh, Andrew, thank you so much for listening this morning. These fancy bags from these stores, including Hermes, you can't get them. You have to spend ginormous amounts of money before Andrew comes up to you on Madison Avenue and says, Mr. Keene, coming in 90 days, we possibly have, we're not sure what color it is. It's like that exclusive.
Oh,
trust me, folks, I'm not spending that much money to wiggle into a Kelly or a Birkin.
Well, okay, here you can do a Prada Galleria bag. We'll set shoppers back a cool $4,600, 85% more than in 2019.
Oh,
and it's not because
God.
Their costs are going up per se. Right. This is just, they're putting the price increases through because they can.
Because they can. They have this, exclusivity. That's what they're kind of pushing.
I was
people will pay for it.
I was in a luxury store this weekend, perchance, and I won't say what name it was. It doesn't matter. It looked like December 23rd.
Right.
I mean, I was shocked how packed it was. Now, what really shocks me here is I can't tell. Ariel, thank you so much for the brief on this. Do I want to go with a tequila seltzer Fiesta 8-pack?
Mm.
Or do I want to look at the vodka and soda pineapple? I mean, the biggest response we get all day, Paul, we don't exist.
No.
Mateo's. High Noon is the biggest response. What in God's name is High Noon?
High Noon, because there's zero sugar. That's why I like it. I'm always watching my sugar intake. So High Noon doesn't have the sugar. There
but what is it, a vodka?
It's a vodka.
Okay. But it, vodka, now, back in high school, you were drinking wine coolers.
Back in high school.
Right? Wasn't the wine cooler the thing that goes with
it? It was the
that?
Boone's Farm, I think, was the college treat. And the Cisco Mad Dog 2020, think we went back
Taking
to.
Taking us way back. All right. So far, this. All right, so
Rich, what do you think?
He's drinking Budweiser in his hands, let's be honest.
Light beer. Yeah, I look at this. Can I ask a dumb question? Can you buy the High Noon Variety 12-pack? Can you buy that in like a grocery store or like at Walgreens or Duane Reade or that?
Not in Jersey. I know not in Jersey. You have to go to
the liquor store.
Yeah, that's a liquor store thing.
So you have to go to a liquor store to get it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm up with the fancy people at K&D. They barely talk to me,
Right.
if the order's under $500, they don't look at you. I don't think K&D up on Madison Avenue's.
I don't think they have the White Claw. Yeah. That's another popular
White Claw.
One.
That's the White Claw.
That's another popular one.
That's the one Riley from St. Louis. I had a sip once. And we were at a bar and she said, here, I have some White Claw. And I thought it was, you know, like a White Russian or something. So much for that. Lisa Mateo, I learned so much from our newspaper report.
Yes.
You know.
News you can use.
You look at this. Here's, you know, Meta's out there. What is this? Mrs. Sweeney? Paul Sweeney is so dope. It's like unbelievable. Nobody ever says that about me.
Exactly.
I mean, it's like, you know, it's like useless here. Lisa Mateo, thank you so much.
This is the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast, bringing you the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. You can also watch the show live on YouTube. Visit the Bloomberg Podcast channel on YouTube to see the show weekday mornings from 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern from our global headquarters in New York City. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen. And always on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Terminal, and the Bloomberg Business App.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.